podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. This is Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Innovative thoughts from baseball's best coaching minds from around the world. Brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. Now your host, former USA Baseball National Team coach, Peter Caliendo.
Hey, hello everybody. Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, wherever you are in the US or around the world. Thanks for joining us. This is the show that loves the challenge, the status quo. We're also the common sense show. Remember, we always say, if you got some common sense, you can go a long ways in this game. And that's something we're going to discuss with a great guest coming up pretty soon. First of all, do us a favor, go to Facebook. It is live. If you got any questions, I can see it right now. Got any questions, just type them in the comments section. We're also live on YouTube. And do us a favor, go to baseballoutsidethebox.com. Subscribe to the podcast and you get all the updates. Also, YouTube, Peter Caliendo, you can see it, the video there. So check it out. We've got a lot of great shows. Can't wait to start this one. Hey, folks, a very good friend of mine. Let me tell you, I can't believe the experience this guy has. Unbelievable. 33 years full-time in baseball. Might even be more by now. We worked together, the Olympics in Beijing. Now, he's coached all over the world. I can't go through the whole resume because we'll be here for an hour. But he was the Olympic coach with the Hong Kong baseball team, Canada also. He worked for the commissioner's office, scouting supervisor, USA and Canada. Internet, talk about this one, instructor at Scout School, MLB Scouting Development Program. He evaluated players like Larry Walker, Joey Votto, Justin Morneau, and a lot more. But he's been to over 25 countries, coached all over the world. You know what? I could keep going on, but let me tell you something. I've been with him. He's one of the brightest guys in the game of baseball. So let me welcome, and then we'll get into some of his background as we go into the show. Let me welcome my buddy, Tom Volk. What's up, Tommy?
Hey, great to have you, Pete. And thanks for those kind words. And I could say every single one of those right back at you, but no one's tuning in for the Mutual Admiration Society. So, take what I've done and kind of times it by two, and you'll be in the Pete Caliendo's neighborhood. You've been a great, not just a guy that's helped globalize the game, especially the ones I cherish are the third world countries that you and I have both helped out. Because you know, you're only as strong as your weakest link, and baseball. You know, there's, I know we're going to go kind of around the globe a little bit in our conversation here. Every place is unique, but at the same time, there are some commonalities. And one of them is the triangle of baseball. You've got your grassroots system at the bottom, and that really holds up everything above it, all the way up to maybe your national team is ranked in the top 10. Maybe you've got people who have succeeded in MLB. Don't get me wrong. The top pulls the bottom up. But the bottom holds the top up, and without it, there is no top. So just like you would think about a pyramid. So you've been a guy that's sort of one of those cornerstones, but the cornerstone of a lot of pyramids and a lot of continents in this world, Pete. And like Jackie Robinson says, you know, your life is only as important as the impact it's had on other lives. And you can really chalk up a lot of names. So anyway, it's really great to be talking to you today.
Well, it's great to have you, Tommy, and I appreciate all that. And you know what's unique about all this is, you know, all the countries we've been to, and we've been very, very, very lucky, trust me, because there's so many people in the game of baseball that would love to be going around the world like you and I have been able to do, and I never take that for granted. You know, what's interesting, and I bring that up because, you know, it gives you that global perspective when it comes to development, when working with players, because, you know, a lot of times you're, you know, you might be in a certain community and you're doing really well, even as a coach or a player, but you really don't know what's out there, you know, that you're competing against, not just at the player level, but also at the coaching level. You know, so it's a global game, 130, 40 countries playing the game right now. There's so much to learn from all over the world. And that's given us a huge advantage because, and I want you to talk about this as a coach, you got to have that toolbox, right? And you got that toolbox of stuff that you got to be able to use. Imagine what your toolbox got to look like, a 747.
Well, you never know, you know, what you're going to get till you sort of jump out of that plane in the parachute. And then you find out once you're landed, you can't go back up to the plane. And this has happened forever to me, but one of the more recent experiences was when I went to Hong Kong. I learned when I got there, after I committed, after I changed my life, after we worked it out with our family, because I was going to be there the better part of a year. Well, it was a year, actually. And it's kind of at the last minute, my wife was unable to join me, which was the plan. And with being empty nesters, as long as we're together, we don't care where we are. But unfortunately, her mother took ill. And so we were going to be separated for the bulk of that year. So while the personal side was sort of changed at the last minute, I show up in Hong Kong and I find out that we're going to have the Olympic team. We're going to do this. We're going to be in the Asian Games. We're, you know, and all this rah-rah stuff. And I get there to find out, well, the most incredible thing was there's one baseball field. There's one baseball field in Hong Kong. You've been there. Yeah. It's called Sichuan. It's a great ballpark. But of course, you've got different teams training there. You've got a women's national team. You got an 18U men's team. So you got to share the field quite a bit. And that's a challenge as a coach. You know,
soccer playing across the outfield too.
Well, exactly. And, you know, the thing, my hope was, well, I'm looking at this place. It's day one. I just got off the plane and I'm thinking, okay, they got lights. I mean, we'll just take the late slot. The national team guys are all working somewhere in university. They go home and have dinner, and we train 7 nights a week. So I just figure I'll take the late session. Well, the good news is at that one ballpark, yeah, there's lights. Oh, but you can't turn them on. Because the, you know, of course, Hong Kong, it's talking 80 square kilometers. There's no more ground left to be broken. It's all built on. So everything is built up. And of course, that means more high rises get built around the ballpark. And then they start, you know, as taxpayers, because Hong Kong is kind of runs in a more capitalistic system, say, than China. And the taxpayers called and said, hey, those lights are bothering us. We don't want them on. So what a tease, Pete. What a tease.
No, since we're on that, because we're going to get to the youth development too, because I love what you said earlier, because you got that grassroots, you got the top, you know, programs, and they got to work together there. You got to have both, because, you know, all around the world, that's where people fail a lot of times, you know, especially federations, where they don't focus on that grassroots level because they're so concerned about the national team. But yet, you know, if they focus on the grassroots, then they forget the national team, you know, and the national team's got to win to make money. And we all get that because the Olympic Committee, you get the money. So there's that balance. I'm glad you brought that up. That's so important. Before we get into that a little bit, coaches that want to have the international experience, okay, advice, because you just mentioned one thing, you better be extremely flexible and other things. So what's the advice for a coach that's starting brand new? He gets a call from a country, get a great opportunity, maybe coach somewhere in a club or a national team, whatever, but they've never done it before, maybe never been overseas. Give them a little background, what to expect and how they should handle themselves also.
That's so applicable. I'm going to go back for a second but relate what I'm about to say to your question. One of the things people are amazed at about Canada is that our national team's been ranked in the top 10 for a long time now. And if you think about it, I'm very proud of that, because we, of course, are we have winter 7 months a year. We are hands down a hockey country, and it's never going to change in my lifetime. Yes, we've got the Toronto Blue Jays here, and that's wonderful, but this is a hockey country. Baseball season, we talk about grassroots, is nothing but a bridge between hockey seasons, and it will never be more. And I know, Pete, you've taught in several cities in Canada, and I'm sure you've witnessed that. Mm-hmm. We weren't performing in the years just before I got to Baseball Canada to the degree where we all thought we should have been doing better, not necessarily top 10, but we thought we had enough talent and a chemistry that should have been performing better, but it wasn't. And this is the part that we discovered, and it relates to your question, even though I'm going to talk about the national team for a sec, is that even when the pros started being allowed to play, and of course we can bring on some of the names you mentioned earlier, Larry Walker, Matt Stairs, you know, we've had some guys who are, there's usually about 25 Canadians that are bouncing around the major leagues, mm-hmm. and some pretty successful ones. The three you named, Morneau, Votto, and Walker, were all MVPs, for example, at Major League Baseball. So people keep coming up here looking for guys. But what we realized was that our national team, as good as they might have been in the major leagues or perhaps in the Taiwan League or Korea, wherever they're playing, we weren't performing. And what we realized was that we didn't put enough effort into exactly what you asked me about. A lot of these guys had done a lot of things, and they're big, strong guys, and they do all the drills, but they hadn't traveled internationally. And that's where we were coming up short. This is where the culture, the jet lag, knowing how to pack a bag, knowing how to be flexible, as you mentioned, accepting that you're walking into a different climate, a different language, different culture, different currency, different religions, different races, different politics. And, you know, I there's one place I went in Asia where they got me an apartment, and I agreed to that over the phone. And then when I got there, I found out I was in an apartment that was literally 80 square feet. I'm not kidding. Thank goodness I'm a math grad, because on the bed, Pete, it was wall to wall, 5'6", and I'm over 6 feet. I had to sleep on the I couldn't hang my feet over the end because each end of the bed was at a wall. So I had to sleep on the hypotenuse. If I didn't know math, I wouldn't know what to do.
You could have ate, slept, and taken a shower at the same time.
That was exactly it, and that was their version of an apartment. But, you know, so yes, the key is be prepared for anything. Get all your shots ahead of time. We're talking to young coaches. Remember Lou Johnson? Did you ever work with him abroad?
I remember who he is, yes.
Yeah, great L.A. Dodger in the mid-60s. Well, won a World Series. I went to Nigeria with him. We get there, and we met in London, England, and then went down, and I'm saying, so you got your malaria shots, right? And your, you know, whatever else I might have got. No, what's that all about? Well, I'm telling you, we get into our hotel in Lagos. It was a five-star hotel, but of course, five-star in Lagos, Nigeria is a little different than we see here. And we're on a low floor. And we're seeing cockroaches that got shadows. I mean, these things were big and they were creepy. And Lou says, let's go. Let's talk to the front desk. Those critters can't get to the top. Let's go to the top of this. So it was maybe 8-10 floors. We go up there and there it's full of cockroaches as well. So next thing you know, Lou is sleeping out on the balcony and I'm hearing this. All I'm hearing is swatting. And of course he's swatting mosquitoes. And I said, Lou, you know, I understand you're out there for the cockroaches, but you didn't get any malaria shots and mosquitoes. Anyway, about 3 days later, he was sick, and we had a three-week endeavor there, and Lou left after 3 days, and he never came back. So I kind of had to tackle it on my own.
And that's a recommendation to the countries, you know, when you're hiring a coach. I know we have over 100 countries listening to the show. Thank you, folks. Really appreciate that. Without you, we wouldn't have a show. But, you know, to the countries out there, you know, obviously you want to make sure that the coaches coming are updated on everything that they need to prepare. So when they get there, Tommy, what about, you know, surprises on the field, whether it be practice or whether it be, you know, games, any surprises you kind of expect in certain countries because, you know, maybe kids are studying or it's just a different culture.
Yeah. To those younger coaches, I just want to add one more thing before they get on that plane. And I mean, they can contact me if they like. I'm at the best way to get me is on entouragebaseball.com. And I know they can ask you, and I probably shared this with you. You know, none of us can really learn a language all that quickly. But what you can do as a young coach, and maybe you're just about to begin trying to do this kind of stuff, it's very rewarding. Contact us or just on your very own. Try to come up with one page, maybe 50 things that you're most likely to need to say. Please, thank you, excuse me. What time do we start? You know, the questions that little phrases, and you know, you're gonna have a 14-hour plane ride pretty well wherever you're going. And even if you did it at the last minute, you got nothing to do on the plane anyway. Try to learn those phrases, and you won't believe how much people appreciate you making an effort. If you can speak no words when you get there, it's tough right off the bat. So make an effort. You know, you're going into their country. Don't expect them to know English. It's your job to know bits and pieces of their language or learn more if you possibly can. But I'm telling you, even a little bit, because as I get older too, Pete, my memory isn't as sharp as it once was, but I know those phrases and I can get by, and they really, even if I mispronounce it, they appreciate it. You're making an effort. And again, you're off on a good start. Just another thing for a young coach. On the field, sorry, it looked like you were going to react to that.
On the field, you're right. That's where we wanted to get to.
Okay. Well, this is the thing, and you related to this earlier about countries want results. I mean, listen, I've done it. I love doing it because I love travel and I love helping people in baseball that need help. And I love those third world countries who are beginning. Those are the best. Those are the most hungry learners. But there's a lot of countries. The last two I went to, Hong Kong and China, again, be sure you know their expectations before you get on that plane. Hong Kong, again, is another good example. Hong Kong will never, ever be able to touch, you know, we see in baseball on any given day, anyone can beat anybody. Hong Kong will never beat Japan, Korea, or Taiwan in a baseball game. Never. And that's not being negative. I'm the most upbeat, positive, we can do it. Any guy, you're going to hear it, but I know we can't do it. And it's only because they just don't have the resources or the passion like those three countries I named. China is a ways below those three, and then below China, there's a long gap, and then Hong Kong, Thailand, and Indonesia, and all those other 20 or so Asian countries. It was nice to hear that Hong Kong was simply trying to be the best of the rest. In other words, starting after the top four, which they knew we really weren't going to be able to tangle with, why can't we be the best of the next 20? So it was a realistic goal. I wouldn't have gone otherwise. But a lot of countries make the mistake that China made when I went there in 2019. So it's not just China that thinks the same. They want you to parachute in and take their national team, let's say China, and become a contender with Japan, because they compete in every factor of life. Pete, in 2008 in Beijing, you and I watched what, in my world, you've seen more international baseball than me, but in my world, the biggest upset I have ever seen in my life was when Taiwan defeated China in the Olympics in 2008. They also beat them in a World Baseball Classic, perhaps a bit before that. That is a colossal upset.
You mean China beat Taiwan?
Oh, did I say it differently? Yes. Sorry. China beat Taiwan. And of course, they are just sport rivals and business rivals. They're significantly problematic politically and getting along wise. So, you know, if you remember Chris Day, what's that?
And I was going to say China headed up by our good friend Jimmy Lefebvre managing the team that year.
Oh, Lefebvre and Bruce Hurst did a terrific job. I think they were there 3 years before that, but still. That's what I'm going to get to as far as on the field, your expectations. But that upset, if I remember right, our friend Chris Day, who I always love being in a boardroom with, I think he's still the executive director of Taiwan Baseball. He sent us a copy of Taiwan's version of, and of course, when you're at Olympic events, you may hear Chinese Taipei. And right. Chinese Taipei is the politically correct way to address Taiwan, but most people just say Taiwan. Well, anyway, their version of USA Today, or in Canada, the Globe and Mail, like our national newspaper. If you remember, Pete, the next day, the headline said to the baseball team, when you march in the closing ceremonies, just keep marching into the sea. In other words, don't come home. They were so embarrassed by that upset. So, but these things don't happen. And so, again, know your country's expectations. And if you are a coach, I'm going to tell you something that I don't tell a lot of people. But as a matter of fact, I don't tell anyone, because I usually wind up competing against them. But I think my years, you know, I've got a few of those years left, but we'll see. But Pete, I'd like to hear your thoughts on this. One thing I evolved into through some successes, but some failures. And that's how you get better in baseball, is failures. You know, I heard someone say, you never lose a game. You either win or you learn. And it's the same in every aspect of coaching. And I learned by going to countries and trying to pull a rabbit out of a hat with a national team, put lipstick on a pig, whatever you call it. You can't do it if don't we all as coaches, and if there are coaches watching this, which I assume most of you are, we all want to fix guys because we love baseball and we want to help and we're good at it and we work with them for a couple of years. You cannot go into a national team situation and take 20 and 30 somethings and try to make major corrections. I'm talking about arm angles to pitchers, batters who step on the bucket, things like that. You don't have time, and they've done it wrong so long, you're going to fail. And I know that through experience internationally. I also know it through scouting. I know what's correctable and what's not. Minor tweaks in mechanics, okay. You know, I turned to one of the pitchers in China into kind of a Johnny Cueto. He had bad stuff. His arm, he had no, the only two things that make you better are of course, physical maturation and mechanical adjustments. This guy was beautiful mechanically, and he wasn't going to grow anymore. He was 35 years old. I just had him start pausing in his set, where a lot of Asian pitchers do stop when that knee gets there. I added about, you know, a 3-second stop, a 5-second stop, an 8-second stop, and then a slide step used when there's even nobody on base. Just throw from a stretch and slide step the hitter. In other words, your arm's only so much. So you got to do other things to try to get the hitter off balance. So that's what I would call a minor tweak in mechanics, because truly, if you think of it, it's reasonable in a matter of months to incorporate that into a pitcher's motion. But I would say right away, get out of the head of fixing mechanics, accept where they're at. And for me, Pete, the best success I've had has been working on the tactical parts of the game, getting those things repaired. I'm talking tandem relays, bunt defense, first and third defense. Pete, have you found with the countries you've helped, what I've found is as soon as they get that flat tire, all four wheels fall off, and there's a big crooked number on the board. And those things fall off because when a mistake happens, they've never practiced recovering on an overthrow to first, and then they make three more mistakes. So that's why myself, anywhere I will go in the future and in my recent past, I hammer mechanics into the night as far as fine-tuning those parts of the game, because you can control that. And if you can keep the wheels on and give up one or zero, great inning. Do you think so?
Yeah, you know, that's a great point. Oh, absolutely. And I think that's something even in the U.S. sometimes, you know, we get a little bit funked into doing certain things and we don't work on the game experience aspect of it. The game, you know, taking the practice and making it realistic. So that way they're able to adjust in games and they're able to do it in games because they just did in practice under pressure. So I'd love to stay with this, Tommy. What did you do with what? And again, Hong Kong, China, it doesn't matter who it is, but what did you do with some of these countries when it came to practice to try to make sure that it was realistic, it was live, and it would transfer into a real game? And I get it. Everything's not going to transfer perfect, but there's got to be some techniques that you use that can help coaches understand how to do this better.
Yeah, that's actually a great question. And you and I didn't rehearse these questions, but like always, you're always on target. I think one thing I did was when we take an infield, which of course is never done enough, that you would take, say, before a game, your infield and outfield, and you throw to the bases and cutoffs. When very shortly into when we started, I started finishing plays. So if we're just hitting ground balls around the infield, it's a practice. We're not inter-squatting. We're just – it's reps, Pete. You know it. I know it.
Working on the fundamentals.
You've got to work on fundamentals. You got to work – you got to hit your fungos and take them. But when they throw it to first – and it's in that situation, you imagine it's a quiet night, not a lot going on. We go right into mistake mode. So the third baseman overthrows first. I stop hitting fungos. We play that ball. Right fielder better have been covering. Catcher should have been covering. Someone's going to go get it. And that left fielder better get over and back up third base, because we're not making a play at second on an overthrow to first. We're really worried about stopping it at 90 feet. So throw ahead of the runner. So someone better be at third baseman. Someone better be backing up third. Center fielder better back up second base on that throw, just in case the runner did get delayed or was confused. Or, you know, sometimes you can do one of those clean deception plays where you act like you've got the ball, but you really don't, and things like that. You know,
Let me ask you while you're on that, what do you do if they finish the play, but let's say they did a couple things wrong finishing the play, then what do you do?
and we go over it right in that teaching moment. We stop. I meant to say, when I'm hitting those fungos, I've always got some backup outfielders or pitchers who aren't in the pen ready to go with a helmet on. And as soon as that when I hit the fungo, they take off towards first. They run it in foul territory. We're not looking to get any pitcher hurt or anything. But if the ball gets by the first baseman, however it happens, or the third baseman might kick it, he might kick it off his ankle over behind third base. I want everyone reacting on that. Yes, generally at Pete, 99.99% of times the fungo drill, you know, we're just hitting them and they're trying to catch them. But I think it's so important to work on tactics with substandard national teams. They've got to learn how to deal with a mistake, because if you don't practice what to do, that's when the wheels fall off. Next thing you know, there's a six on the board and you're not going to come back in that game, all because of one thing that happened, maybe an overthrow or a one hopper that got by the guy. You know, we talk about things like, throws to second base. Let's say for catchers throwing out runner. Of course, we have our catchers throw to second base because it's reps. Mm-hmm. But we also have our shortstop and second baseman, whoever decides to take the throw for the obvious reasons, trying to work on just a pick. I don't care if the ball goes into center field. You're either going to get the guy out by making a pick and applying. No sense throwing your body in front of it, knocking the ball down. The runner's going to be safe. All you're doing is stopping the ball. Well, that's what the center fielder does. As long as your center fielder is into the game and backing up that throw, that runner's not going to third base. So they've got to work, for example, on picks, not on blocks and stuff like that. And corner guys, if you're making a play at third base, completely opposite play. You're the bodyguard for the president diving on the grenade. There's a bad throw coming to you at third base. You better forget about the out and the tag and figure out how to block a ball. And we teach guys in those same fungo drills, get it down. That ball cannot get by you because the runner's going to easily score. And so, that's one major change that I make with the recovery of mistakes, to try to keep one flat tire, not crooked numbers going on the board. And number two, a lot of countries have budget issues and they can't get away. Their players aren't embraced by their employers and say, hey, anytime you're going away, I'll give you a leave of absence. And we want you to wear that flag for whoever on your chest and do well. We're fortunate in Canada because most of our companies that employ guys always take care of them. We're really lucky that way. But in most countries, that's not the way it is. So because you're by yourselves and you have the, unfortunate circumstance of having the inner squad and trying to get that adrenaline level up to a point in an inner squad that's going to be like a game, pretty hard to do. So what I incorporate and paid, especially in Asian countries, Asia has been where I've traveled the most. And one of the commonalities, some things are different country to country, some are the same. Hey, I'm the first guy that'll prophesize about the need for reps, but I've got to countries and I have literally seen them, not just with adults, but with kids, because we're going to get to that grassroots part and talk about, while you're there, coach, get that country focused on kids, because you're not able to create a 30-year-old and turn them into as good as a Japanese 30-year-old, because they've done something right for a lot of years. But what I do in practice is I've arrived and I've seen coaches, and I try to watch before I start opening my mouth. I've seen coaches tell a 10-year-old kid, you're on the tee for the next hour. Like, are you kidding me? They're kids. I don't care if they're Asian or American. It doesn't matter. You've got to incorporate some fun, some competition. No one, unless they're playing baseball for a living, will sit and hit soft toss for an hour against the screen. I would never do that to a pro either, but this is their mindset a lot of times. So I remember I converted a team into a drill where it wasn't just, you can enhance a T drill by putting a T at the outside corner, high and inside. You can put a mark on the fence with some tape and try to hit line drives into it. You can put a T ahead of the plate back for pitch. You know, there's obviously varieties. And soft toss, you can, hey, how about throwing two balls instead of one? And when it leaves your hand, say high or low. And then the hitter is really focusing a little bit more because he's only hearing it as you're letting the two balls go. Or colored wiffle balls if you use those balls. You know, like those three behind you. I'm going to throw those three out of one hand, and I'm going to say yellow just as I'm letting it go. And, you know, so yes, you got to put variety into drills, but I believe in putting fun and, more importantly, competition into drills. Pete, if you and I were at a bar right now with a pool table, I never play pool or darts and stuff like that, but we'd have a beer maybe or two, and we'd say, hey, let's play darts, or let's play pool. And we go over, and I'll tell you what, just because of who we are, I would try every single thing possible to beat you in that random game, because we're guys and we got testosterone and that's alpha males. And so you get up in the ninth inning in a clutch situation. It's been proven scientifically that your adrenaline level, your needle of pressure is at the same place if you're competing against the peer. So you are practicing for the eighth inning or ninth inning at bat when, let's say, I'm throwing BP to two guys. We're playing the island game like I use on the TV where one guy gets off the island. I'll start with four, give them five swings each, and I grade them. I said, that's a 10, that's a 2, that's a 0, that's an 8. Add them up, you got whatever. And then the worst guy, I make fun of him. You're off the island. Go hit off the tee till we're done. You know, well, you know, Pete, you know, guys, that's on a Tuesday night, and there's no competitor, umpire, you're not in a uniform. But if they're competing against each other, you are preparing them for that late inning at bat, as an example. Do you agree?
Well said, man. I love it. And the other part I wanted to ask you about, since we're with the practice aspect of it, you know, the majority of the game, and I hope I get this correct, but I would think majority of the game happens between the pitcher, the catcher, and the hitter. I mean, that's where a lot of the action happens. I get it, the ball's hitting defense, and I'm with you, man. I mean, they really need to, you know, have that game experience defensively, because the game goes so fast, runners everywhere, you know, the outs. I mean, there's so much going on defensively, but a lot of it is pitcher, catcher, hitter. So we have to prepare that aspect of the game really well for competition. And, you know, if you're going to play a team that's better than you, like you were talking about, you know, with Hong Kong, with other clubs, you know, you got to prepare your guys and gals correctly for that. What's some advice there and how to work on preparing though the pitcher catcher aspect?
Boy, we'd be boring if we coached together. We agree on too many things. I think that's bang on, Pete. And I'm a guy that has my pitchers throw batting practice. I'm an old codger in many ways. But I, and the day I'll stop doing what I'm doing is when someone gives me a good idea, but I stick with my way because I'm stubborn. I love hearing new ideas, and I love you asking these questions. Coaches, all you got to do is make the case for me. If you're an assistant coach of mine, if I happen to be the head coach, you got to respect the chain of command. And I've been an assistant many, many more times than a head coach, and I do respect it. You need that open door. Let people come to you if you're the head coach with their ideas. If they make the case, don't be so pigheaded. Don't be so insecure not to implement a good idea. And I'm going to give you a good idea right now, because no one to this day has ever talked me out of pitchers not throwing BP. What are they going to do when they get to the game? They got to pitch to, as you said, a hitter with a catcher. Yep. They can bullpen all they like. That's not cutting it. And if you think of it, Pete, I do this drill when I need a fun night. I put a tee on the plate and every guy gets 10 balls, and we put the frontline defense out on the field. Obviously they get a turn too, so they take turns, but we put a frontline defense on, and I give every guy 10, and I'll put like $100, I put $100 bill under the tee, and I'll say one of you is walking away with $100. Okay. And what I do is they put the ball on the tee. You put the tee wherever they want, high, low, whatever they want. Take a look around. Happy Gilmore, it. I don't care what they do. They try to get hits, and they run them out.
Yep.
And the guy that gets the most hits wins $100. We finish the drill, and then I tell them what the drill was really about, because everyone thinks it was a hitting contest. No, right. It's not. I show them the results on the score sheet, Pete, and you'll find any coach that tries this, you'll find that the batters bat about 450. That's their batting average, and they get to hit the ball exactly in their sweet spot. They can look at the defense and fake this way. They can do anything they want, and they still they fail more than they succeed. That thing that I do is for pitchers.
Yeah,
because walks drive me crazy. So when you get to that 3-0 count, your job is to throw an overhand straight strike right down Broadway. Because just as that drill will define or prove, there's a better chance they're going to make an out than get out. You throw ball four, it's batting 1,000. So I think throwing batting practice is critical for a pitcher. And one of the things they've got to learn how to do is how to throw a 75% fastball for when you have put yourself into a three ball situation. Don't blame me for the catcher calling for that, because I have a signal for it. I want that guy to sit back and just lay it in there. And if the guy creams it, well, it's better than a walk. At least he earned it. And half the time or more, he's going to make it out. So, no, I definitely feel that's important. And one thing is funny, actually, it was in Hong Kong. The captain was our catcher. The captain that I was told about when I got off the plane. Bit of a surprise. Not sure if – I don't always want a captain on a baseball team, but that's okay. I'm not going to disrupt things. And we had another catcher with an absolutely phenomenal arm and a leadoff hitter type of running speeds, unusual for a catcher. But there was no doubt shortly into my time there that he was going to be our catcher. And the only thing he didn't do well is call pitches. And so Benny, the captain, who I moved over to first base, I said, here's what we're going to do. Our pitchers don't know any more than the catcher. I want you calling the pitches. So you call him to the catcher, he'll flash into the pit. You know, I might call five pitches a game, but I'm, as a coach, I don't put a guy behind the plate that can't call a game. But Chris, but then I came to realize through the captain, Benny, he said, Tom, he can call pitches great. Look what we're doing here. He knows everybody. So, you know, Pete, like, I'm looking for him. He gets 2-0 against somebody, and then I see a curveball or something crazy. But the thing is, he knows every hitter. They're pals. So that's one of the evils of inner squads. Catchers are doing reverse psychology. When you should get a junk pitch, you get a fastball. When you should get a fastball, because they're out of options because they've caught your at-bats about 5,000 times. So they're just trying to trick you mentally. So Chris actually called a very good game.
It is tough for everybody. I mean, even high schools, if they have scrimmage games, you know, the kids know each other. And you just got to be. But what I love what you did was you were real creative. And again, you adjusted and you were creative, because in a real situation against another national team, that first baseman that you had might be calling the pitches because the catcher doesn't know that, you know. And sometimes we look at the game, it's always got to be taught the same way. Well, why? I know coaches that give signs at first base, not at third base, for certain reasons. What I want to talk about, and I love what you said, because, you know, pitchers, it's interesting. The statistics show that they've got a huge advantage. Whether, you know, basically, just if you just throw the ball down the middle, you got the advantage. Okay. Because right. That's 1,000. That's what you were saying. But it's a mental thing. It's a mental block somehow that they're not convinced of that. So what you're doing is you're getting them to be convinced, because they're throwing more strikes and they're getting more outs by doing that. Is that the right track?
That's exactly the right track. And I want to add one point to what you added about the first baseman. And, you know, it's a game of adjustments, especially internationally. But if anyone hears this and wonders, you know, geez, you got a guy that's in, and he really wasn't that bad at calling a game, but Benny was much, much better. But I wanted that young guy back there with a strong arm, because, Pete, let's face it, at even the highest levels, the head coach, maybe he's coaching third, maybe he's not. But what do, Pete? Between innings, we watch at the start of the game, we watch the catcher throw down to second base. This is going to dictate how much you're going to try stealing that night. Now, Chris's arm was a howitzer compared to Benny's. Benny was, you know, about 37 years old, slowing down, had a bit of a hump. Chris got up. He was more athletic. He got rid of it. He had a cannon. And he was really wasn't all that automatic. He didn't throw any higher percentage of guys out at second base, but what decreased was the number of attempted steals against us, because when a coach sees that arm, they're not stealing that night, or they're stealing a lot less than if they see a catcher with a hump. So put the strong arm out there, because most coaches, especially if you're playing them, you know, one game and an Asian games, and it's you're playing Thailand one time, they may find out through a couple of risky steals that our catcher isn't that accurate, but they generally don't find out. They just shut it down before the game because they saw the guy's got a hose.
But that's a great example too, because you said you got to do a lot of infield outfield situations. So when you're taking infield outfield and your guys look pretty sharp, guess what the other team's doing? They're going, wow, these guys are pretty good.
Yeah. No, that's a great point. We're all trying to grab any morsel we can of information about the other team. You know, it's not like when we're coaching globally in these, you know, games every 2 years, World Cups, 4 years, whatever, what you're going to see, you might see them one time if you're lucky before you play them. So you've got to take what you can get. So there's ways to sort of use that to help you as a coach and your team.
Yeah. And Tommy, you know, this is interesting too, because, you know, I'm a simple person. My vocabulary is basic and I tend to use the word failure, you know, and I know new school coaches, they kind of stay away from the negative words, but you know, the game unfortunately does have some failure in it quite a bit, more than most games. Is there any difference, because, you know, we're talking about different cultures. Is there any difference when it comes, when you see a player failing and they're down on themselves from a mental standpoint, from mental training, how do you deal with that as a coach? Is there any technique or any things that you might handle differently in another country, or is it pretty much the same like anywhere else?
That might be, you know, when I go abroad, especially into Asia, and I've had the pleasure of you've coached Cuba, and it sounds crazy, like, who can coach Cuba? Cuba's one of the greatest countries in the world. But there's always things any coach can learn from any other coach, you know, and so it was quite reasonable for you to do that. I find, again, I'm kind of referring to Asia, not only when guys fail, do they tend to just keep swirling down. The coaches just, they just rip them apart a lot of times, and it shatters their confidence. And that's probably one of the most things I work on. And listen, the first one to acknowledge, who's number one in the world? Japan. Who's number two? Korea. I think U.S. might be number three. Maybe U.S. is number two. Taiwan's number four. Three of the top four countries in the world right now, and I think Cuba's five, are the top three teams in Asia. So I'm not going there thinking I know it all. I learn a lot from them. But one of the things I know I can help them with is to take it easy on guys. Maybe not every guy, but most guys, they don't need the coach yanking you out of the game at second base after there's one out and you kick the ball. Pete, how embarrassing is that? But they will do anything, and they don't care how the player feels. I think you really have to work with these players to put some confidence in. You know, Pete, do you ever go to a mound and the pitcher, you can tell him mentally, he's just, you know, kind of he's hit the wall. He's doing too much thinking, and you can't really. So I go out and I says, you know, I don't know if you're trying this different today, but your stride is a lot shorter today. It's about a foot and a half shorter than it normally is. Just lengthen that stride out. You'll be fine. And I go right back. Now, Pete, I'm going to tell you, his stride was no different than the day before. But you give a guy one thing to work on, placebo, and like a sugar pill, in other words, you know, and that can take him right out of it. So sometimes you got to trick him a little bit. But if you start getting into mental, you're thinking negatively, you know, you're trying to give a guy a psychological lesson on the mound during a game, it's not going to happen. Give him a mechanic, a simple one that he can take his worries off and just focus on one thing. As a player, I just find that I think the coaches can and should make a much greater impact at that teachable moment. Personally, that's why I don't coach third base on most of the teams that I manage. I love coaching third. I'm 60. I can say this. I'm going to be the best third base coach on our team. I like being in the dugout. That's the best place for Tom Volk, because I can talk to that hitter right after he watched strike three go by. I can talk to the pitcher right after the inning about why we went with that pitch at that time to make them better. It's a teachable moment. It's fresh in their minds, and you got to get some positivity going in their minds. So, because players, especially the international ones, I've seen very few recover from a mental gaffe. I really have, or a physical gaffe either. Yeah.
Interesting. You know, and I was thinking when we were talking about Japan, I remember going to Japan and I was going to work with the university all-star team. And one of the coach comes up to me and says, "Hey, I need you to take a look at the infielders, you know, and would you, you know, and if you can help them out." I said, "Okay, great. I'll look at them." You know, I got done afterwards. I'm thinking, I'm not sure what I'm going to do with these guys, because they're some of the best infielders I've seen anywhere in the world. I mean, I'm not going to work on their footwork. I'm not going to work on their arm, on their transfer of their hand, you know, the ball, that the glove, the hand. I mean, they're just so good. It's incredible. But again, it goes back to them, you know, they do stress the fundamentals. And I know here in the U.S., we're getting away from the fundamentals, Tommy. And I know I'm going to jump a little bit because, folks, we're going to, you know, one thing I want to say, and Coach Volk knows this better than anybody, Canada is one of the best programs in the world when it comes to coaches' education. I mean, that's the key to really the success. Tommy, when we go to these countries, you know, we want to help develop their coaches, but at the same time, they've got to have a program that continues to develop their coaches, because if they don't work on their coaches, what's going to happen is the same thing that happened in, is happening in the U.S. and it happened in Cuba, which is amazing. Kids are going to find something else to do. In Cuba, they're starting to play soccer, believe it or not. That you'd think that would never happen. In the States, same thing. Why? Because at least in the U.S., sometimes practice is boring. They don't like the coaches. It's all down to coaches' education, right?
Yeah. You know, we focus so many times at clinics, even I've seen some of the USA and Canada go very heavy on mechanical things at a clinic. I think you've always got to incorporate how to run a practice, how to use time and space. What do you do when you get to the field that you realize when you get there that, oh, we didn't tell you. Yeah, this other team is going to get half the field. They get the outfield, you get the infield, or they take a draw a line from home plate to center. You get the first base side, they get the third base side. Man, you've got to have a plan because if they get bored, you know, you only got them really for about 45 minutes anyway, mentally. You know, you get the reps in and you make the practice. Got to be 2 hours if it's a high level team at the very least, but you've got to get those moments. You've got to have a plan, coach. And I think we don't normally focus enough time on how to use time and space, how to incorporate competition and fun into a practice. It's just like, you know, I teach math right now online, and the whole trick, it's the same principle. Don't let them know they're working. Don't let them know they're practicing. Get them in a little game, a contest. It can't always be that way, but that should always be your goal. You want a guy to get 100 swings off a tee, number one, and you've seen this, but don't tell them to go take 100 swings off the tee, because right, the last 92 are going to be a waste of time. I'd rather him not have done that, because they're going to be long, lazy swings, and now he's practicing and creating a bad habit. So, you know, you want 100 reps. How about 10 reps with a partner 10 different times? You're still going to get all the reps in. It's not going to take you any more time, but you're not doing – you know, you're not doing things that created boredom. They're jumping in, they're jumping out. One guy's feeding, one guy's hitting. You know, you can make them five swings at a time. That's about what you get at a, you never really get more than five swings in that bat. So bring that to the tee. But I think you've really got to have a plan for a practice. You got to be able to adjust at a practice. Rain, someone forgot the baseballs. You know, we only got three because they happen to be in my bag. You know, adjust, keep them moving, keep them having fun, keep them in stations. That's always your saver as a coach. You never have enough coaches at any level. So set up stations. And I'm talking 15 minutes and get them to the next one. Keep them moving. Keep them moving. Do all your reps. I'm all about reps. But they can't be one guy throwing BP, one guy hitting, and 11 guys standing in the outfield thinking about going to play soccer or getting online and with their girlfriend or playing widgets or something. You know. So the other thing, Pete, to that point is, I mean, COVID – is there's obviously a million things we can say wrong about it and bad impacts and all the way to mental illness. It's a horrible thing. It is they say necessity is the mother of invention. You were doing these things well before COVID, but online and video analysis, it is the most underused coaching tool in the world. Coaches, every parent's got a phone. Guess what's in the phone? A camera that has video. Like, they can email it to you. They can, you know, you can do so much with that. Again, you want to keep kids busy, have a coach working on what, just simply filming a kid and letting the kid watch himself, even if the coach doesn't know a whole lot. Like, there's so many ways to and now, you know, COVID has forced us to do what we should have done a long time ago, create a playbook for kids in third world countries, kids who can't afford a personal hitting instructor. You know, now you can do it online. And coaches, yes, Canada, and Pete, you've been here delivering a lot for us. The National Coaching Certification is kind of our foundation, NCCP. Don't get me wrong. There's a difference between a certified coach who sits through a bunch of 4-hour modules and a qualified coach, you know, but You don't let a doctor touch your kid if the doctor's not certified. You don't let a teacher teach your kid. And I am a believer that I don't think, I think, Pete, what do you think? I've arrived at a conclusion after a lot of years that no coach is better than a bad coach. Sandlot baseball for Tom Volk is better than having a bad coach. What's your reaction to that?
Well, you hit it on the button, and I'll tell you why. Because, you know, we've always said, and I mentioned on the show quite a bit, one of the things, you know, like you said, I mean, we send our 10-year-olds to school, and that person's got to be certified. But yet, we send a 10-year-old to a, and I'm going to use the word travel program, and I'm not bashing travel programs, that they just happen to go to travel programs or some real good ones. But then, you know, are they educated? And you're, and people say, well, they're only going for a certain point. No, they're all year round now. So now that's like going to school. So I'm sending somebody to you know, and then forget about not teaching the fundamentals. Even if they don't know the fundamentals, now you have the aspect, I'm talking about the mental issue. You know, how are they talking to these kids? How they handle them when there's failure? We're not there all the time. So it's important. Yes, I agree with you 100%. That's why if you look at the world, the largest baseball coaches organization that's not organized, okay, are volunteer coaches. There's more volunteer coaches in the world than there is if you add up high school, college, and pro coaches. They're the foundation of the sport. And I agree with you, they got to be certified. And the second part is, yes, we should be letting kids, if you got five practices, take one practice or two of them. Let them just play the game you just mentioned on your own. Hit a ball off a tee and just play a game. You just sit back in the stands and watch, evaluate, take notes, whatever you want to do. Let them play 5-on-5 if they're smaller kids. Let them, you know, play stickball. Let them play wiffle ball. Let them do something different and just figure it out on their own, right? I'm with you on both of those aspects. I love it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really an art, and the kids have so many options these days. Other sports, music, art, you know, everything they can do on computers is, you know, it's taking kids over. I'm glad my kids they're all university age, and don't get me wrong. So they've had cell phones in their hands for a long time and are vulnerable to falling prey. I'm wondering what's going to happen in about 20 years when studies start coming out of the impact of computers and video. I mean, it's certainly, you know, I know our Olympic team in Canada, we don't have them watch television and no screens for 2 hours prior to their bedtime. You know, kids want, you know, I mentioned earlier, the only two things that make you better at any sport, physical maturation, minor mechanical adjustments, because I don't believe at the elite level, major mechanical adjustments are truly attainable. Okay. The physical maturation point, and I won't get into a clinic on it, but you know, when you sleep, you go into four stages of sleep. You want to get to stage four, because that is when you grow bigger and stronger. And when their minds are on their phone in bed, for example, that's why we literally, and when I take teams away who aren't Olympic teams, I always have a bag, and they go, oh brother, look what Coach Volk has. I've got a bag full of those power bars, you know, with five, like you for a computer with five plugs in them. And when we get there, I go, bring your 2 hours before bedtime, I want your cell phone. Oh, you got to charge it, Coach. I got to keep it. No, I got my bag. Here's all these plugs in my hotel. I have them all, put their cell phone in my room. Oh, but Coach, we got to get up. Guess what, son? There's a thing in your phone called a phone, and there's a thing called a wake-up call that us old guys know about. Why don't you figure out how to make a wake-up call? You know, I don't, even at that level, I know they're not going to be a better player tomorrow because they got into stage four for 30 minutes longer, but I'm just trying to put these good habits into them. So I think video analysis is far and away the most underused tool, but of course, it can also be a dangerous thing if kids are getting too much into these things.
And I'm glad you brought up the sleep also, but no doubt the videos, the cameras, you know, late at night and all that. I love that you brought up the sleep because that's something that now is really being taught more and more. It's almost at the forefront of development, getting proper sleep. And that'd be a whole show in itself. We're going to finish it off with, because you got such tremendous experience in scouting too. There's a term you used and I want to get into it. Looking at players through spy glasses, and we're not going to get to that yet, but I want to ask you before I ask you that, I want to talk about, you know, because you're talking about young kids, and a lot of coaches, kids come to practice or a game, and some kids are early and some kids are not. Now, I understand some kids can't get there because, you know, their parents work and there's, you know, divorced parents, maybe one car, there's all kinds of situations. But if a kid gets there early, what's your recommendation with coaches? If you got 2-3 kids getting there early, what should they do? Because they might be 15 minutes early. They're just going to sit there and not do anything?
No, and that's just a reality, of course, that those things are going to happen. And as you said, it's not always the kid's fault. What I ask them to do is, and we all know, every person watching this knows what they're going to do. They're going to pick up a ball and start playing catch with somebody, right? When I talk about being open to, you know, someone making a case for me, I've really bought into the use of bands. You know, look at the number of arm injuries, not just pitchers, but all over the field. And of course, there's going to be more because pitch count limitations, which are incorporated at all youth levels now. And I am a champion of that. I will fight tooth and nail that. Why? Because Dr. Andrews, Dr. Job, the guys that cut into major league $1 million arms, when they tell me there should be pitch count limits, I think they know a bit more than I do. So the case made. But I think it's wonderful to have, if you've got a 12, let's say you're going to coach a house league team, a rep ball, 10-year-olds, you're beyond the pitching machine, you now use pitchers. But my first two sentences at my practice, if I'm running that team, is, my name is Coach Volk, you can call me Coach Number 2, you're all pitchers. I'm not asking him who wants to be a pitcher. You need 12 pitchers. You're, because most kids wind up going to weekend tournaments. They have kind of fallen into, you know, 8 teams, 2 pools of 4, you're going to play everybody in your pool. Now you got a record, with, you know, 2 wins and a loss, a win, a loss, a tie, because maybe it's a round robin game, they stop the game. And now the top 2 in each division are going to cross into Sunday and play a semifinal and a final. You're talking about 5 games in a weekend. You need 12 kids to pitch. And so there will be more arm injuries. I'm fascinated, of course, in major league teams, you have to believe, again, that they know more than we do because they do it full time. Well, many teams, probably all teams now, I would say, have their pitchers doing band work. The Toronto Blue Jays, who I used to work for, and they're just up the road from me here, every player, every position is mandated 15 minutes of band work. And I'm not going to do a band lesson here, but, you know, the value of Pete, whether you've got it against you've hooked it onto a fence, it's a simple tool. It might be a ball that you're holding onto. It might be just a grip thing, but you're trying to, you know, work both ways, you know, lightweight, because it's just resistance, lots of reps, and you're not going to get hurt doing it. But I have now, just like my bag of plugs that I take to a tournament, I have a bucket of striped balls, which I use for throwing, because I believe in that kids coaching themselves. But I'm talking about that, taking a black piece of electric tape and going around across the 4 long seams on a baseball. So if they grip it properly, they throw it properly, they can coach themselves and say, look at that. I saw that 12-6 spin. I saw that straight line going away from me. And another thing I have now is a bag of bands. I've really bought into it. I'm wondering if those are weighted balls, that blue, yellow, and red ball behind you on those encyclopedias. That what you used in grade school, Pete, encyclopedias?
those are regular Kenko balls. And one of the things we do is, you know, I love the Kenko bat because it's so light. I mean, it's like a feather, but this doesn't break. And you got the Kenko ball. I love the 5x5 games. You know, I'm not a big T-ball person with 5-year-olds and 6-year-olds. I'm big on this because they're always hitting it all the time and they're having a lot more fun doing it. And it's so easy and a lot of ways to hit. So yeah, this is more of a mushy ball, you know, so it doesn't hurt them at all.
I'm all about mushy balls. I used to use rolled up socks to teach kids how to, you know, biggest problem with hitters, kids or adults, hardest thing to correct in a hitter is fear. In other words, people will refer to it as stepping in the bucket, stepping out. And they all want to start changing stances and do different things. And I just take rolled up socks and I throw them BP with the socks and use the socks because that way when you hit them, they don't get hurt. But they can practice the technique of how to properly avoiding a pitch. Talk about a station at practice. I am going to finish my comment on those kids that get there early in a sec.
I was going to tell the folks, you got a lot of passion. You love teaching. So you're going to keep going. We'll get to that. Don't worry, guy. You finish it off and then we'll get to the practice, you know, the early part.
Yeah, on that one thing about hitting, because it is the number one problem, and it's really tough to correct. Yeah. If a kid has the habit of stepping out, he's been repeating it for years, you're not going to fix it. It's going to take if you really wanted to fix it, even for a high-level athlete, it's probably going to take you 2 years. Don't be surprised, because they'll do it in the tunnel. They'll do it on the tee. They get back into the batter's box of the game. Billy Beane, read the book. It's a different thing. They just revert back to their bad habits. I'm not a Negatron. I'm just telling you what's realistic to any coaches listening. So instead of saying, oh, like if you ever see a guy who steps out and the coach goes, well, let's start with a close stance. So now he's got that, if he's a right-handed hitter, he's got that left foot about, you know, 2 feet towards first base. He's all closed up. And all they do is step further, and now they're more off balance. Their eyes are moving more because they're stepping more. What I do, if I hit a weekend where I need a guy to perform, I will make an adjustment to the batting stance, but I do what professional bowlers do. I always like looking at other sports for things. A professional bowler, if they want to hit that pocket, right? If they're right-handed, the 1-3, the one, because the pins are 1-2-3, you know, 4-5-6. You want to hit between the 1 and the 2. And if they say are missing constantly down below the second pin, let's say they're missing to the right, you would think they would move to the left, just like the coach would think, well, I'm going to close up his stance because he steps out. Nuh-uh. If you're missing to the right as a pro bowler, they actually move to the right. There's a lot of science behind that. But again, I'm a curmudgeon, but I listen to science if it makes sense to me.
What would you do with the hitter?
What I do with a hitter is, if it was a weekend where I needed him to perform, I will give him an open stance.
Okay.
And people think that's crazy, but I need some confidence in the guy. I need some results if I'm going to have him in my lineup if it's a really important tournament. And because if you're open, even significantly open, you've only got one place to go, and that's towards the pitcher. You can't step out anymore if you're open. So, but that's fine. But if you're a coach with that problem and a kid and you're spending all kinds of time on stance and reps, trust me, no one ever has a when they were kids, taught them how to avoid a pitch. That's never a station at a practice. How do you avoid a pitch properly? Kids have no clue. You got to show them the damage when they freeze up, what can happen when it hits you here in the neck and the fingers. It costs you a foul ball and a hurt digit. You know, show them that it's proper to turn around, bend down, bend your knees, get the bat on the ground so the ball doesn't hit it. And when you do that with rolled socks or Pete's balls on his shelf that are Kenkos, they're soft, the second thing you do is, let's say I'm going to give a kid 10 reps. I'm going to throw him 6 at him. So he should be loading, because every good hitter has some version of starting the hands. You load and then you launch. So he loads. Oh, the ball's at me. I'm ducking, right? We're talking a half second, remember, because that's all it takes from a ball leaving a hand to a hitter. But I also throw him about 3 or 4 strikes during that drill, so that he's not just practicing how to get out of the way because he knows everyone's going to hit him. Well, you're not teaching him anything. So you can do it indoors even, because Canada, we have to do a lot indoors here. That got me to my rolled up socks. But throw him a strike every 1 or 2 pitches, because now he won't know if he's going to get hit or not. So he's practicing a truly real situation. And they're actually, to get back to your original question, the kids that get there early, band work, a drill like avoiding pitches that kids, you don't think kids love throwing Kenkos at each other? They love it. I get to hit Charlie. He's been bugging me all year, you know? So, little games, pepper, you know, a little contest, you know, if you happen to have a batting tunnel at your park, you know, whether it be, you know, judge, if you got 3 guys, I'm going to be the judge. You each get 5 swings. I play the winner, and I'm going to judge your quality off of those 5 tee swings or soft toss. You know, they can play short games and get into practice. Just don't let them pick up a ball until they've properly stretched themselves out.
Great points. Explain the bands, why you're doing the bands.
Oh, yeah. It just gets the arm warm. It's building strength once you start putting day after day after day together. You're working opposite muscle groups, light weights, and lots of reps. So you're building strength, but not bulk. Nobody wants, you know, you're not training yourself to go to the beach and look good for girls. You want to become strong, but maintain your fluidity, pitchers especially, you know, that you shouldn't be doing a lot of squats and things that are going to build bulk. Keep yourself loose and free. And I love the bands for that because the resistance, so there's less chance someone's going to get hurt. A lot of kids will try to pick up too much weight. I'm not sold on those weighted balls at all yet. They will admit, the industry, that there's still, you know, years of implementation and then results back. If you're a college guy, you're a fifth year senior, you haven't never been drafted, you were hoping to get drafted as a free agent, you want to go weighted balls, hey, go for it. What do you got to lose if that's your goal? You're going to wind up, you know, in an office or pumping gas or whatever. So, or if you're a, you know, you're in the minor leagues in baseball, you're in double A, you get some cups of coffee in triple A, you're 25, 27, 28 years old, you are a pitcher, want to go to weighted ball. Again, if it doesn't work, what did you lose? Because there are documented cases of weighted ball succeeding. I'm not against them. I'm just not for them for kids. And for me, if it was my kid or my player, I want to see just another couple of years of the research kind of saying that, you know, the positives are worth the means of it. Yeah,
and I love 3 points that you brought up. And coaches, you know, great educational stuff. Let me tell you, because when you brought up pitch counts, you know, you mentioned, you know, also that, think about it. Look what the big league does. You know, you don't see many big league pitchers, relief pitchers, pitching 3 games in a row. So don't throw your kids 3 games in a row. Okay, ever, 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 ever. No young kid should be doing that. You know, you talk about the weighted ball. Great point. You know, your muscle, how do we know the tendons, the muscles, the structure of the body for young kids even ready for that heavy ball? That could be doing damage. I'm not going to take that risk. But when you're 15, and folks, we are not taking calls right now, but we will hopefully soon. When you're using a heavy ball with an older player, you know, they can handle it more. So I know I've had experts tell me, you know, wait till they get you strong enough to be able to handle that. But you know what, Tom, the pressure of everybody wanting to throw hard all the time and not really focusing on, hey, let's focus on, how about strikes? How about moving the ball around? How about changing speeds? How about all these other things? The other thing is, I love that you brought up, was all the things about prior to practice, what to do and not to play catch because they're not ready for that.
Right.
And man, here's a big one that you brought up, and I'm glad you did it because we stayed with the youth kids. One reason they do leave the sport is because they're afraid of this. So if we can train their bodies better to understand how to deal with it, or, you know, adjust like you're doing in your hitting or even playing catch, they're going to stay in the game longer. But if they keep getting hit by a hard ball, sooner or later they're going to say, this ain't any fun. I'm going to go, I can find a lot more other fun things to do. So those are all awesome points. Finish it off with that, and then I want to ask you about the scouting pipe. If there's anything else for our young coaches?
Yeah, it's such a tricky game. I mean, we love it for all of its complexities. And my wife Paula grew up in Montreal. You know, went to a few games with her dad, not but didn't like baseball any more than any other sport. But once she started living with a coach, unfortunately for her, somehow she's done this for 33 years. I tell you, it's amazing. But she's become a huge baseball fan. Why? Because she got to appreciate the complexities of it. It's like me. I was a basketball kid. Even though I'm in Canada, I'm a lousy skater. I never played competitive hockey because basketball was the same season. Then my kids start playing hockey. I start going to practices, and I just got my ears over the glass. I loved going to practices. And once I learned more about the complexities of each position in hockey, our kids played soccer. I never had a chance to play soccer. I played baseball. And people are so quick to say soccer is boring. Get your kid playing soccer and go watch a practice and listen to the complexities of that game that go on. Oh my God. It's riveting. I really cheated myself a lot of years by sort of taking that very dense point of view. Oh, it's boring. The score is 1-0. There's no better highlight in sport than a soccer goal, because every goal is so unique. But yeah, and the same thing with baseball. And Paula really did fall in love with when she came to realize all the complexities and all the inner, you know, things. So what was I talking about, Pete? What were we addressing?
I'm going to finish it off for you because I think this will be a great finish to get into this. You know, a lot of coaches at a lot of different levels, but mainly at the younger levels, they might have a team. It's for the first time players that they don't know. They've never seen them before. Maybe saw a few of them, but they need to evaluate them, you know, and you use the term looking at players through spy glasses and evaluating, being a scout, you know, running scout schools for Major League Baseball and all that. But bring it down to the grassroots level. Now I'm a coach. I got to evaluate it. I got to evaluate these kids because I've got to have a plan to help individualize each person to make themselves better. So where do I start?
It's a great thing. And just to close out, I remember what I wanted to say at the end of that was to people coaching youngsters and trying to plan a practice, please incorporate the why into your coaching. In other words, just because we're the adults and they're the kids, or maybe we're the adults and they're the 20-year-olds, they're still younger than us. Don't make them do stuff because I said it, I'm the coach, do it. That is long gone, folks. Don't do that. Don't be afraid to tell them the why we're doing rubber bands, as you said, Pete, so they appreciate the what they're gaining out of it and everything they're doing. You don't have to beg them. You don't have to waste a lot of time, but just let them ask why. Don't get mad by them putting their hand up and asking why. It's a very legitimate question. And I honestly do the same thing, again, back to the math that I'm teaching online right now, as well as teaching baseball online, is informing them of the why. You know, just this past week, we're literally doing area of a rectangle, you know, length times width. These are grade sevens. And yeah, you want length times width? Just tell me how to do it. Oh, it's length times width. Good, I know what it is. Yeah, but do you know what a square kilometer is, or a square meter, or in your world, Pete, a square inch or a square mile? You know, do you know, like I live in an agricultural area. I said, you know, your mom and dad might be farmers. Your farm is, 3 kilometers by 6 kilometers. You've got to fertilize the place. How many square kilometers of a fertilizer do you need? You know, that's like, believe, I think the why, if you're going to teach concepts, that you have to tell them the why.
By the way, thanks for not asking me to answer that question, because I would have flunked, but go ahead, keep going.
When we teach at the Major League Scout School, we have the candidates the first day take a piece of paper and roll it up. So P, right now I'm looking at a GQ cover as I see you, and now I'm looking through the spyglass, and I see what looks like an old tablecloth on an Italian restaurant table. Oh, no, that's your jacket. Okay.
folks, you didn't know this was a comedy show, too. And but, by the way, Tommy, speaking about comedy, something I think you fail to tell people, and that is, you know, we can have some fun with kids, too, right? You can let them relax. Like, you love having fun. I mean, we work together in some high-pressure situations in the Olympics. But yet, daily, we were always having a good time. We were focused on what we're doing, but we're having a good time. And that made things go a lot smoother.
Yeah, I agree 100%. You know, they've been in school all day. And again, I'll revert to Asia. My gosh, talk about school. And listen, I don't challenge it. I respect it. They are in class a lot. One group I had in China in 19, we were going to a 15U tournament. So they're in grade 8, I guess. Or our grade 8-ish, and because we just practiced way too much. We didn't get enough competition. We bought some tickets on a cheap flight. I talked to my boss into taking these kids away and playing some games that counted. And about a week or two before we leave, I'm using this as a motivator, right? It's like a vacation. You might want to surprise your kids sometime and say, hey, we got tickets. We're going to Florida this afternoon. Well, if you bought the tickets 4 months ago, they had 4 months to look forward to it. And I was using this in practice. Hey, guys, we're going to Shanghai in 2 months. We're going to Shanghai. That night I said something, I'm sure, like, hey, guys, we got 2 weeks to go. We got to get on this. We got to get this drill sound. We got to get our bunt defense in order, et cetera. And they're going, we're not going. And I go, what are you talking about? We can't go to the tournament. And this is I'm the head coach of the team. No one's told me we're not going to the tournament. Well, we were going to the tournament. You know why? It's because as their days were already kind of getting up at 6, getting to school at 7, you know, showing up at our practice, which I did on the school site to at about, what time do we start? 4:30. Geez, they're in a lot of hours. And again, I mean this, I'm not trying to be politically correct. I really respect it. I mean, the more, just like batting reps, the more reps you get, the better you are a hitter, the more hours you're in class. You know, there's some point of diminishing returns, but kids are smart. I personally just prefer a bit of a more balance in life, music, art, sport, I don't care what it is. But anyway, so what happened with the kids is that They took the, I don't know what they call the U.S. people. We have standardized testing here for grades 3, 6, and 9. And I can't remember the acronym for it, but, oh, and the teachers are judged by it, and the schools are ranked by it. It's a big deal if kids are getting those fundamentals, because now everyone's taking the same test. Well, in China, they have the standardized testing. However, this particular middle school went from an A to a B on their test results for that age of kid. And so they decided, well, you need to go to school from 7 till 9 as well. Go home for dinner, come back to school. 2 more hours of school a day. Why? Because the teachers got docked 25% of the pay because the standardized testing. You want to motivate teachers? Dock their pay in China by 25%. Just amazing culture. So some things you can't control, you know.
Hey, Tommy, by the way, and I want you to finish it up with the spy glasses because I interrupted you. Before you do, in reference to my nice Italian jacket, remember, we have Italians everywhere, and we know where you live. So, what you say. Finish it up because this has been great. Finish up with spy glasses. Well, and the evaluation of players at the young levels, how important that is.
And
how
to do it. And, you know, I've always thought of myself as an okay coach, and I think I went from an okay coach to a good coach after my 10 years of scouting, because you start with this at scout school, and next thing you know, your eyes are trained to do it. And what this is telling you is, you know, you got a kid, you're dying to help him, because we all coach because we want to help kids, but we're looking at the whole pitcher or the whole batter or the whole defensive shortstop. And what you got to do, because something you just, they're not doing it right, but what's wrong? And it's tough for a volunteer, never mind someone who's been blessed like you and I. If you and I didn't work in baseball 9 to 5, Pete, we'd really be dummies after 30 years not to know more than volunteers. So I'm not going to hesitate to say I know more. I'm not going to say how much or how much, whatever, but I better know more if I've been, you know, doing it during the day as well as night. Because even as working in baseball, I still coach 5, 6 nights a week as a volunteer. I love it. I can't get enough of it. But so try using a spyglass or a spyglass approach if you don't want to bring a piece of paper to your practice, and just bear down on the kid. Look at the pitcher from two angles. Look at the pitcher from behind the catcher. You know, is he stepping towards the catcher? I'll give examples of things I look for back there. Is his arm up at least 90 degrees? Is the elbow at least 90 degrees, or is it dropping below the shoulder? What's this angle here? Normally, you know, an overhand pitcher is kind of just beyond 90 degrees. No one's really here, truly. But you want to generally, unless they're, you know, 20 years old and doing something here, that's natural. That's fine. We all have a different release point. That's the other reason you do long toss, is to find out your natural release point, besides building your arm strength. But, you know, so those are things you look for. And, of course, you look at the movement of their pitchers, their location to the catcher's mitt, and those types of things. Or you film it, by the way, because you got one of these. Take it home and look at it at length. Slow it down. And then go to the open side. When I talk about the open side of a pitcher, I'm talking about the right-hander. You're going to the third base on deck circle or coaching box. And if he's left, of course, you're on the first base side. And then you've got to look at hitters from those two places as well. The hitter, the first thing behind the plate, is he stepping towards the pitcher or is he stepping in the bucket? As they say, and you got a big problem in your hands, coach, but you need to find that out. That's where you find it out from, spyglassing. Then you go to that open side of the pitcher, and now you're watching him from, you're looking just at me as if I was a pitcher. Okay, is he separating his hands like a dart thrower, or is he separating his hands thumbs down? Is he going into a T formation with his arm, so to speak? Is his arm getting extension and back? I don't mean extension like this, coaches. The straight arm's not good, just a little bend in the elbow. That's proper extension. Is he, is his palm facing down as he's at his rear extent point of extension, or has the palm come up early and now he's catapulting? Coach is watching this. Put your arm out like this for 5 seconds, and guess what you're going to feel in your elbow? A little tweak. Turn your hand over. The tweak goes away. We as humans are stronger the longer our hand stays on top of that ball. You wouldn't carry a bucket of water from the beach to your cottage like this. You would always carry it overhand. So that's why we pitch like that. So again, your spyglass goes out there. Where is he coming up? Sure. Oh, let's look at the rear point of extension. And then of course, going forward, is the lower half being spent early and the upper halves and the arm is just trailing and you've wasted all that energy kinetically from your body? Or is that knee going up and nothing no party home to home plate is starting until that knee has reached its highest point. And now there's synchronization between the lower half and the upper half. And are they going to the home plate together to reduce stress on the arm, to enhance velocity on the fastball, and so on and so on. Same thing with a hitter, you know, the same types of things that we all know. Use that spyglass approach and you're going to find out if he's not going well, if he's not doing as well as he was a month ago, your spyglass is going to tell you where he needs correction.
All right, Tommy, and folks, listen, you know, if you listen to the podcast, this will be up on baseballoutsidethebox.com. We're going to take all of Tom's information. EntourageAthletics.com is the website. We'll put everything up so you can get a hold of Tom also. But before I forget, because I'm smelling my pizza burning, and so we're gonna come to the close here with Tom Balk. But so what I'd like for you to do is, you know, any final comments to coaches, players, and parents when it comes to coaching? Any final thoughts that you want to leave them with? And then we'll shut it off, man. This has been fantastic.
Oh, I love it. It's so great talking to you, Pete. I don't care what we're talking about. And if anyone truly knew us, when we travel together, you and I are talking baseball probably, what, 10% of the time? And then we're going to do laundry together and watching pastors go by and getting into conversations. And we've been so blessed to embrace the different cultures in the world. It's incredible. And anyway, I think two things. Number one, don't get hooked. Talk about scouting. You want to start me on radar guns. We'll be another hour. I'd like to dig a hole and throw all the radar guns and cover them up. And the same goes for this tsunami of baseball analytics that we as amateurs following the lead of Major League Baseball are into right now. Mm-hmm. Exit velocity, launch angle. Hank Aaron, who just passed away about a month ago.
You worked with at the World Children's Baseball Fair.
Yeah, great event, great man to partner with his colleague Sadahara Oh in Japan, the two reigning home run kings at the time. And let's hope that someone will pick up that torch. I'd love to see Jeter get in his hands. I can't imagine a better guy to take that baton from Hank Aaron. But do you think Hank knew his exit velocity? Do you think, you know, folks, these are interesting things, and they are motivators. I see kids putting gadgets on bats. I see hit tracks machines that people are paying for an hour to use, and they get to go look at it. That's fine. That's fine. But don't govern yourself by it. Don't judge yourself by it. There's a lot of kids, a lot of players, college guys. Pass this on to them or check yourself. Don't let them, because we've got no games right now. Because we can't play each other because of COVID and the protocols. Some teams, my son's team, my son and daughter at UBC, Pete, they can't even inter-squad right now because of the orange, you know, or we go by colors here as far as what stage they're in with COVID. They can't even inter-squad. So, and of course, our weather is cold here. So they're indoors a lot on that hit tracks machine, and they can fall prey to falling in love with that number and judging their how well they did in practice today by their exit velocity. Give me a break. You know, you've got to go stand in the box, face a pitcher, figure them out, have a hitting plan, done your reps, you know, hit the ball where they ain't. Doesn't matter your hitting velocity. You know, so don't fall in love with that stuff. Parents, kids, coaches, they're tools. Analytics, no problem. Incorporate them into even major league teams. This tsunami, it's a flow and an ebb, right? Like, and in about five, I'm going to say maybe 10 years, all these MIT GMs, and I have nothing against them, but it's a wave that's gone too far. It's gonna settle itself, and there'll be a place for analytics in trades, in drafts, in who to move up from the minor leagues, who to cut, who to pay more. Right now, it's all about numbers and analytics. That's wrong. The needle's way too far over here. And we, who at the bottom of the pyramid, who follow the top, are falling into that same extreme. Don't judge yourself on it. Just play the game. And secondly, Pete, I'm going to use a couple of Canadians for this last point. As you mentioned earlier, Pete, any pitcher that throws is throwing about, he's getting about three quarters of the people out, right? Because the average batting average in the world is probably about 250. I don't know, maybe lower. It's not 300. You're batting 300 in the big leagues. You're making millions. right? That's failing 7 times out of 10. And we got to remind ourselves of that with our kids. They're not pros. They're going to fail 7 times out of 10. We touched earlier about, you know, keep staying positive with the players you coach or the parent on the drive home, etc. You've got to, because it's built into the game of baseball. The two greatest Canadians, the greatest guy to ever pick up a ball and throw it, is Fergie Jenkins, pitched for the Cubs, Hall of Famer, 284 wins in the major leagues, struck out more than 3,000, walked less than 1,000. I think there's only about three guys that did that, Maddox, and I'm going to say Randy Johnson, I might be wrong. And the greatest one to ever pick up a piece of wood was Larry Walker. Joey Votto is making a very strong run at catching up to and perhaps even surpassing the great Larry Walker, who was inducted to Cooperstown, the second Canadian to be in the Hall of Fame, but the ceremony hasn't taken place yet because of the COVID. What they talk about, Fergie Jenkins will tell anybody, a recommendation to a kid to an adult, control what you can control. I've got a great quote by him. I'll send you if you contact me. Fergie Jenkins said, it's something like this. I can't control the weather. I can't control the umpire's call. I can't control the defense behind me. I can't control how good the hitter is, et cetera. I can just control me and the pitch I throw. And I stay within myself, and I don't waste time chasing other people's business. And Larry Walker, the greatest comment I've heard from him is, and Larry Walker, three batting titles, or three MVP, one MVP, three batting titles, 300 and, oh my gosh, 83 home runs. I might be a bit off there. I think it's 383, 300 batting average lifetime, et cetera. Larry Walker's quote goes like this: the only statistic I ever cared about was going 1-for-1 in my next at bat. I don't have to explain that. I think it's one of the greatest quotes I've ever heard. Absolutely. Put it behind you. If you hit a home run, put it behind you. If you strike out or if you foul out, to me, that's the worst at bat ever. Double play is not very good either. Put it behind you. Just look through the windshield. That's why windshields are this big and rearview mirrors are this big. You got to look forward.
Great stuff, Tommy. And folks, you're probably wondering, geez, man, we went an hour and a half at least.
Oh, did we?
That's because of all the knowledge that Coach Volk has. Listen, we just skimmed the surface on this stuff. I kind of jumped around in 3-4 different areas. I like to give the audience kind of an overview of a lot of the game. Let's put it that way. I know we could isolate it on one specific thing and do one show just on one thing, but I think we talked about some great stuff, and I really believe you mentioned a lot of great stuff for coaches, players, and parents. So, folks, hopefully you took a lot of notes. I know I did. Tommy, can't thank you enough, man. I am going to go have my pizza and then go over the show, because I always tell our audience, you gotta listen to the show sometimes more than once, because you're going to miss something the first time you listen to it. So, you know, it's a good way to pick up new things. So, Tommy, thanks, man. Appreciate it. And best of luck, my friend.
In honor of you, I think it's Saturday. I'm at 7:45. Well, I shouldn't talk clock because this may be aired at a different time, but I'm heading towards supper time. I'm going to go up and talk Paula into it might not be pizza, but I could see a lasagna or a pasta meal tonight coming my way.
If the folks follow me on Twitter at Baseball Out or on Facebook at Peter Caliendo, you'll see that, you know, I lost 20 pounds recently, and I certainly didn't do it eating pizza, but I do have it once in a while, maybe once a month. But I love it. All right, folks, let me thank Tom Volk for this fantastic episode. Special thank you to Brian Crocker, producer with the Lineup Media Group. And of course, a great thank you to everybody in the U.S. and around the world for being on the show, for listening to the show, and also watching on YouTube and on Facebook. Listen, our audience is why we have over 100 countries listening to the show. It's because you forward it, because you tell other coaches, players, and parents about the show, and we really appreciate it. We think we can get a lot of great information out to a lot of people to help develop the game long-term, especially at the grassroots level, and get kids to play the game longer. So again, folks, want to thank you. Stay healthy, stay safe. God bless you, and we'll see you on the next show.